I'm Brandon Isle. I'm with BYU Idaho Radio, and State Senator Doug Ricks of District 34 joins me here in the studio. Thanks for coming in today.
Oh, thank you, Brandon. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, it's another year, 2022, and we have a new session coming up starting on Monday. And so many things, I think, have happened over the last year. Can you tell me, first off, just kind of what you hope for this session and maybe what we can expect this year?
Sure, I can do that. So most people know there's a budget surplus that the state has. There's roughly $1.6 billion. So we're in really good financial shape. And so a lot of our legislative actions will revolve around what to do with that. I'm pretty sure that's likely we'll provide some of that money back to the citizens in tax relief in one form or another. We feel in most cases that, you know, we try to set a budget and estimate how much money we need for that. And once we've accomplished that, we feel like the over amount that we have is really needs to be given back in a lot of cases to the people. So there'll probably be another tax cut, maybe on income tax or other things. Property taxes are another big issue. Most people a little shocked, I think, in some areas when they got their property tax statements. So there's some work to be done on that. We touched on that last year, started that process, did some legislation, but we'll continue that process and try to figure out how to keep the shifting that's going on because of home prices going up so much. It's causing homeowners to pay more of that burden on property tax than commercial and agriculture.
Right. And you sit on the Local Government and Taxation Committee. And
yes.
So you'll be dealing with a lot of these issues. Besides just giving money back, what are other things tax-wise that could possibly be done?
Well, yeah, so I am on the Local Revenue and Taxation Committee, Local Government and Taxation, and so there's other ideas that have to do with that. We've looked at a possibility of trying to even, there's a proposal, I don't know how far it will go, but to even possibly eliminating property taxes.
Oh, wow.
But it would require increasing sales tax a little bit, maybe a penny or more on the sales tax. And so there's an offset on that too. And so when we go in there and we try to change any of those formulas on taxes, whether it's property tax or whatnot, the normal process is to go through the committees. We have public hearings, and we do hear from a lot of people. A lot of the city folks throughout the state that run the cities, the mayors and city councils, they didn't want us touching the property tax bases. And I can understand a lot of cities are have a hard time trying to cover all the costs with their budgets and things. But on the other hand, you know, it's, you know, in my view, it when you have growth within a city, when new people come to a city and you have new growth and new businesses, it really shouldn't put a burden on everybody else. Your taxes, since you've been here for 10 or 20 years, really shouldn't go up if you have a new subdivision build next to you. And some of that's been happening, and so we're trying to get some of that into check. And the idea of economies of scale, that taxes really shouldn't be going up on property when new growth occurs, or perhaps with the economies of scale, it should go down a little bit, but that hasn't been happening. And so we probably will look at those, what we can do a little bit more.
Yeah. And $1.6 billion, that's such a big number for a surplus. I know a lot of people have talked about shifting a lot of that money to education. Are there some ideas there that you welcome?
Yeah, I think there'll be some talk about education. Idaho's, you know, has been painted as one of the lower per student rates on what we give. However, there's other metrics that you can use and look at that puts Idaho in a pretty good shape when it comes to our education. But I think there will be talk about, I'm sure there'll be those that want to put a lot more money into education. This past year, with all the COVID money and some of the ARPA money, education has gotten almost 50% more funding this past year just through federal funds. It's almost unreal how much money that they've received this last go around.
Yeah, and a lot of those dollars were for specific things. And I know one thing that over the years Idaho has tried to do is help teacher pay, grow that, and then keeping teachers in Idaho, which has been difficult, especially, you know, we saw, what, a new report for November where it's a record number of people quitting their jobs. I'm not sure what that looks like for Idaho's teachers, but I'm sure salary may be part of the discussion this year.
Yeah, I think it is. And so a few years ago, the legislature with the governor's office proposed a plan. It was a 5-year step-up plan on funding to education. And the legislature held their bargain, held their part of it, and provided the funding that we promised. And in addition to that, we actually gave, in most years, an additional $100 million more per year. So the education has been stepped up a little bit over the years, and I'm hearing reports from our superintendents that they're not losing a lot of teachers, as many as they used to. So Madison School District, for example, a few years ago said they used to have about 20% turnover, which is pretty high, but now it's down under 10%, you know, around 8%, which is a pretty normal process. You get some of that no matter what.
Yeah, people retire, they move, things like that.
Yeah. And in education too, so one thing that people don't realize with Idaho and Utah too, the type of, especially here in East Idaho, we have a lot of families. A lot of married couples will have, you know, probably more children than the average household has nationwide. And so we're going to have more kids in school per capita per household than states like New York or California, because we have a higher population. Oftentimes, the mothers sometimes will stay at home and watch the kids and not necessarily go out in the workforce. And so that provides, so there's one, you know, maybe a husband who's the income earner and not just one per household and not two, which makes it so we're not quite comparable to other states when it comes to how much money we can give per person or per household. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is very, it's hard to compare apples and oranges. I mean,
we're always going to have,
we call ourselves the family community, right?
Right. We're always going to have probably larger size classrooms because we've got more kids in Idaho, and Utah is the same way. What we do look at, though, is the performance and how our kids perform on some of the testing and how well they do. And our kids are not behind. Our kids are doing very well. Our teachers are doing a great job. Our schools are doing good. We're getting good value for what we're doing in our schools.
There's a lot of other issues that are happening. If we look at last year, which was the longest session in Idaho history, which included the return in November, there's a lot of legislation that went back and forth. A lot of it passed, some of it didn't. What are some of the highlights for you from last year, and what may return from last year?
All right. Well, I'd like to, I can just address kind of some high-level things that happened in the legislature. Every year we pass over 300 bills. There's like 360 or something like that this past year. So there's a lot that does go. Some are appropriation bills that we have to do every year, but some of the things we did that were significant, I thought, and I don't think that the legislature probably got a fair shake with some of the press coverage because they were focusing on certain things. We did have a little bit of struggle or a little tug of war with the governor about the emergency orders. And we addressed those. And so on the balance of power, and I'll talk about that in just a minute, but we did reduce your personal income tax rates, the top tier, from 6.9% to 6.5%, which is a pretty big break. And I think there'll be more room to drop that even further this upcoming session. We reduced the workers' compensation tax rates for business owners, what they pay for their employees. We are the only state that gave a tax rebate to its citizens. Idaho was. It was at least $50. It could have been more if you paid more taxes. We passed some limits on county budgets relating to property taxes. That was House Bill 389, referenced earlier. We'll keep working on that a little bit more. The balance of powers issue, and there's always a little bit of tension between the governor and the legislature, and that's just part of the way the Constitution set us up, because there's three branches of government. But arising out of what happened, the governor no longer needed to indefinitely extend the state's emergency declarations to be able to receive federal funds. We require the county commissioners now to approve or reject any orders from the Idaho health districts. So if Idaho health districts wanted to force a mask mandate or quarantine, whatever, it does require the county commissioners to approve that within your county. We felt that that should be something that an elected official should be there for, where there's accountability. I was a co-sponsor on that bill. We limited the emergency declarations the governor can call to 90 days without the approval of the legislature. So if it goes beyond 90 days, he would have to call us in to extend those. We restricted the authority of the health and welfare director, such as quarantine orders, to healthy people. He had the authority to enact mandates and shutdowns for an indefinite period of time. Again, he is not an elected official. We just wanted to make sure that there was some accountability on that if things went really wrong. The emergency orders legislation and laws in Idaho really hadn't been updated much since soon after the World War II. And so a lot of them were geared towards the nuclear fallout type things and nuclear threats. And any responsible legislature members would have done something similar to what we did this last year. We as legislators took a lot of heat from the press because they thought we were trying to grab power away from the governor, but the governor only has power that we've delegated to him as a legislature. And as the rulemaking body, we decided to adjust those and make them a little bit more appropriate for nowadays. The governor did veto our bills earlier on that, but then we were able to pass pretty much the same legislation with the minor tweaks later on.
Yeah. When he vetoed those, he even sent you a letter saying, here's why, and then you sent him the next one. He's like, right. Okay, here it is.
Right. He may not have wanted to pass those or sign those in the end, but there was a lot of pressure on him too. There's a lot of politics involved in some of those policies that change, and a lot of pressure. We passed legislation declaring that all citizens are essential workers. We also passed legislation to further protect your Second Amendment rights during extreme emergencies. So the governor, he actually took the authority and circumvented some laws during the emergency declarations, and we made it so that he couldn't touch the Second Amendment, so people can't have their guns taken away under any circumstances. You know, it wouldn't be, I guess, a good legislative session unless we've tightened up the Second Amendment rights one way or another. Idaho's got, I think, the best Second Amendment rights within the nation, or one of the best for sure. We also passed a joint resolution to place a constitutional amendment on the 2022 general election ballot to allow the legislature to call itself back into session. That'll be interesting because since the House never did fully sine die, that we kind of call ourselves back in. So that'll be interesting to see how that one pans out.
Yeah, and that'll be, like you said, on the general election ballot in this coming November.
Right. Yeah, so there, I think the majority of the legislature does not want to be a full-time legislature. We're a citizen legislature. We're only part-time. And most of us don't want to turn that into a full-time type of a deal. So,
And last year it kind of felt that way.
It kind of felt that way. It went long in the regular session, and then we had the special session come up. But the intent really is, for the most of us, I don't think there's, at least in the Senate for sure, that there's no appetite to become a full-time legislative body. So on election integrity, we passed a couple of bills in that realm. Senate Bill 1168 would prohibit the use of private money to help run our elections. So there was some funds available from Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, Facebook type.
They call him Zuckerbucks, I guess. He reached out to county clerks throughout the nation and provided a grant program that they could apply and get these funds. Most of the county clerks who requested those funds didn't realize it was coming from Zuckerberg until long afterwards, but we actually stopped that. So all the funds that go to run our elections have to go through the state, through the normal process.
And will there be an opportunity to get more money? Because I know with the concerns over election security and things, counties will probably need more money to run an election. And when there's special elections, which we've had more of this last year or two, it costs money to get those ballots run and get people to the polls. Will there be more money available for them?
Well, that's probably a good question. I would say yes, there could be. If there's proposals to increase some of that funding, we'll just have to see where that goes. I'm sure if there is a real need to increase some funding for elections, that I don't think the state would push back on that at all. Idaho does have some pretty good security within our states, our elections. I do feel very confident with our election clerks, our throughout the state and the counties. I'm not aware of any real problems or concerns that you hear about nationwide in Idaho.
Yeah.
One other bill that we passed regarding election integrity is Senate Bill 1064. It would restrict the ability of any voter to request a different or second absentee ballot. So there was a little bit of a loophole right there. Somebody requested a nonpartisan ballot for the primary. They could come back and request, oh, there's nobody on that one. I want to get a Republican or a Democrat one. They could actually request a second ballot, and it's could have been a little bit of a loophole there. So we stopped that. So on education, we passed House Bill 377, which would restrict teaching critical race theory and any forms of discrimination in our schools based on race. That's CRT's a pretty hot topic right now on the national news. Idaho was really one of the first states to pass any type of legislation on that. This particular bill that we have is pretty fair. We just don't want anybody to teach discrimination type things, any basis. It's if you read the language on there, it should be, you should feel pretty confident about it.
Right, and this is one that I think took this issue has taken a lot of teachers, kind of blindsided them. They're like, we're not even teaching this. What are you talking about? But where it has become a national conversation, and I think a lot of groups have pressured legislatures to do a lot with this, especially in Republican states like Idaho. It's interesting to see where this has gone so far, and it will likely come up again this session, or maybe it won't. I don't know.
You never know. I wouldn't be surprised if there is more talk about that and more discussions on it. I'm not on the education committee, so I don't hear quite as much on that. But I'm not aware of widespread problems. In talking to some of our local superintendents here and in Sugar City, I'm just not aware of a lot of problems of that in our local school districts. So Senate Bill 1006 would improve the reading assistance to help K through third grade students read it at their own grade levels. House Bill 385 would increase teachers' pay. We bumped that a little bit, so the base pays. And House Bill 222, I'm sorry, would provide funding for teachers' career ladder. So which it recognizes experience in addition to continuing education and degree advancements. And so we've had the career ladder in place. I don't think it was funded quite enough, and this provided a little more funding for that. So those are some of the highlights on what we did. One of the bills that I was excited about, I got my wrongful conviction bill passed. If you recall, it was vetoed last year by Governor Little, and we worked out what needed to be changed on it, the differences, and we brought it back, and he signed it right away.
Yeah, and already two people have been paid for their wrongful convictions. Chris Tapp, I know who you worked with.
Yes.
Was one of those in jail or prison for, what, 19 years
or
so?
Yeah, he was just close to 20 years, just under that. Yeah. There was another gentleman over in the Boise area, Charles Fain.
Yeah, Charles Fain.
He was in jail about the same length of time, and he was actually on death row. He was in maximum security for a number of years, but he was there about 19 years, and that was about 20 years ago, and he was let out. And when he was first let out, and he was wrongfully convicted, they overturned it through some of the advanced DNA technology and proved that it wasn't him that did the murder.
I don't think he was even in the state at the time.
Yeah.
If it's the right person I'm thinking of.
But anyway, we got it done. They tried to get some sort of funding for him 20 years ago, and it didn't go anywhere. But the timing was right when I brought this bill with Chris Tapp, and I didn't even know about Charles Fain at the time, and they reached out to me when we first introduced it, and was so glad that he was part of that process. Just a good man. So after 20 years in jail, just about, he waited 20 more years to get his funding, but he did get a pretty good check.
Yeah. $1.4 million, I think,
yeah,
is what he got. That's a lot of things that happened last year. And I think for the regular person, it's hard to keep track of all these things. I mean, it's all on a website, it's all available, but we typically hear about the more explosive things that happen, the rhetoric and the maybe the bigger bills. But as you look at the legislature as a whole, what would you say people should know about the legislature and the legislators who you are and what you're doing in Boise?
So I would say, I'm impressed with the other legislators that I meet there. You know, the constitutional process is you elect somebody to represent you in your area of the state, and people come from all over being duly elected to represent the people in their districts. Each district may be a little different. Some of the economics, some of the landscape, you know, Northern Idaho's a little different than East Idaho and Boise area. And you bring all these people together with their vast experience and the different jobs and careers that they have and the people they represent. And we discuss these things. We look at the bills that need to be passed and legislation, and the process works. There are good people in Boise that want to do good things. Almost everybody I've met has good intentions of trying to do their best. It's easy, you know, we're a pretty easy target when it comes to people want to take shots at us, and I understand that, and that's fine. It doesn't bother me. I've learned to kind of thicken up my skin on things. But I think we really try to do what's right for the state and do what's right for this time. You know, timing's everything on a lot of things. And, you know, there are some real struggles within the state, even within the Republican Party. You know, the Republican Party's got, I think we have probably 65% majority within the state. But within the party itself, we have a couple of branches, a couple of factions that are kind of seems to be fighting within ourselves. And that probably is the bigger fight that we have than with the Democrats at this point, Republican Democrats.
And I think we'll see that play out in these primary elections.
Yeah, I think it will be. Of course, in the statewide elections, the governor's race, lieutenant governor's race, there's the two factions running against each other. Even coming up later this week, the Republican Party has their winter meetings, and there's a proposed rule change that's really raised some eyebrows within the party. And that proposed rule change would require, if it passes, I'm hoping it won't, but if it passes, it will require candidates running as Republicans would have to first vet their approval through a local county committee, like the Madison County Republican Central Committee or the Bonneville County Republican Central Committee would have to approve you before you could be on the ballot.
Interesting.
And I think it goes way too far on control. You could have and the group of a handful of people determine who can be on the ballot in the Republican primary or not.
Yeah. I've seen this happen in Colorado. I lived there for a time, and I remember very poignantly the sheriff's race in the county I lived in. There was a committee, and there were a handful of people running for sheriff, and the committee chose one or two who could be on the ballot, effectively choosing the next sheriff. And so these, I think it was 11 people, they chose the next sheriff, and the voters had no say because there was no Democrat running. It was only Republicans. Mm-hmm. And so the people didn't actually get a choice. It was, I felt it was wrong.
Yeah. See, and I agree, and that's a good point. And my frustration and concern is that the harder our Republican Party cranks to the right, it's going to allow more people to get fed up with that and say, okay, well, I'll go on the other side and we'll start electing Democrats. And so in Colorado, is that a blue state or a red state now?
It depends on the year.
Right. It's a very purple state. It can go either way. And I think the harder in Idaho, if we crank down our policies to one extreme or the other, it creates opportunity for the other party to get involved, to take control. And I think it's happened, similar type things have happened in Arizona and, in, like you say, Colorado. And it concerns me about Idaho. A group wants to make it so hard on conservatism to a point that it puts a lot of people off. And I think they'll say, I'm tired of that. You guys are too far left. These guys are too far right. I do see a lot of people becoming unaffiliated. That category is rising within Idaho, and it concerns me a lot because we need, most of those are good conservative Republicans, but we need those people back into the party to help us hold the line so we don't go real hard right on certain things.
One other issue that's surrounding all of this is the redistricting commission. They've put out a map, and it's being challenged by several groups. And whatever happens, it affects the legislature as a whole. Certain districts get changed and moved, and that makes it so people who are already legislators have to run in a different district, or it creates a lot of change. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how it's affecting District 34?
Yes. Yeah, so every 10 years through the census, you count the people and they redraw the legislative maps. And so some years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court required the districts to have the same number of people within a certain tolerance. I think they have to be within 10%. when you first draw those. And what that requires is you have to kind of draw these boundaries that sometimes go beyond counties. And so, but every 10 years you rebalance those. And so this coming year, 10 years ago, it was about 45,000 to a district. This year, this 10 years later, it's going to be about 52,500. So Madison County, their population come in with a census of 52,925 or something right. close to that. So we are just right near the optimum size. And so it looks like Legislative District 434, which currently has all of Madison County and five precincts in northern Bonneville County, will probably lose those five precincts in northern Bonneville County from Iona, Yukon North, and it'll just be Madison County for Legislative District 34.
Yeah, and we're waiting, of course, to see what the courts will do with the challenges, and that we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, that's true. And however, whatever they do in the courts, even if they throw the current plan out, I think our district boundaries will still be just Madison County. There's with the way the law is written right now, it looks pretty certain no matter what. So, me as a state senator, I do sleep pretty good at nights, knowing that it's unlikely any change will happen other than it'll just be Madison County. But it does look like from the current legislative district proposed plan out there that there'll be at least a dozen legislators who'll be forced out. I guess we could call it term limited out, because they'll either have to run against other legislators where they've been thrown into the same district through boundaries, or they retire. So there will be some shakeup that goes on.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. This has been a chat with State Senator Doug Ricks.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I really appreciate the opportunity to serve the people of District 34. Thank you.